is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Yeah, it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Well, good evening, Nicole. It's certainly a pleasure to hear your voice and a pleasure to be here tonight.
Welcome to the show, Stuart Wild.
Thank you very much.
John Kehoe, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, how are you?
Next up, Dr. David Morehouse.
I'm so glad that you called me because you are doing such an important task, important work, because you are spreading a very positive message.
I was really moved by last week's show because we made a commitment to a worldwide event to try to change consciousness.
I'm feeling enormous energy around this show, just enormous. I really have to hand it to you, Nicole. You've created sort of a niche of amazing connections. It's just like the angels and the devatas that are like attracted to News for the Soul is amazing.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. And we're back, and we're live. We had a little bit of an outage there. We had a bit of a late start. Apologies for that. But right now, Carol's Healing Sanctuary can fix all of that. She's here now, one of our newer hosts in exciting Friday shows. Let's get her on to reintroduce herself and her show and her guest for today. Carol, welcome back.
Hi, here I am.
Yay.
Hello everybody from Carol Everett's healingsanctuary.co.uk. Thank you for tuning in and listening. I hope you're all enjoying this new show, and I'm hoping to get more of an interaction going. This is new to me, so you just have to bear with me. And for those that were listening last week, and those that have just tuned in today, I'll just recap you on something that I did before the show started. I put somebody on the, 2 weeks ago, on the Tomorrow's World medicine machine, and I put her on again just before we started, and we will get the final results on what she says. But this is a little bit of her story that leads us up to this point. And this, I'm reading what she said. Sunspots on face. Carol has treated sunspots on my face before. The last time she treated the spot about a year ago, it cleared up and disappeared. And this was, by the way, a cancer spot, the one that I worked on before. And a new spot has appeared after a lot of stress. Now, it just goes to show, this is not what she put, but stress is the worst thing ever. And it lowers the immune system, and it always seems to go to your weak points. So this is what happened to Rose. I've gone back to Carol for help with her medicine machine. After the treatment, at the end of last week, the spot had been getting smaller and cooler. I knocked it with my glasses, which made it bleed. I had recently been on a long-haul flight, and the spot seemed to get worse after that. My nasal passages and the back of my throat have been very sore. It has all started to clear up since Carol started treating it last week. The inside of the nose is starting to heal. A lot of the yellow mucus has been popped up. Both ears have drained with fluid coming out, as well as the spot on the outside of the nose improving. In the past, I have had whole body treatments with Carol, and it's amazing how she has helped me again with my strength. I'm so lucky to have helped her. Now, we're now going to see what happens at the end, hopefully, at the end of the show. And it's interesting, really, because bearing in mind, I always stress quite clearly, and I always have done for years, and it's all over my website, I do not cure cancer. I do not actually cure anything. And I can never, ever say for sure what the end result is going to be. And that is the truth. That is the absolute truth. But what happens is the energies go into the body, go to the weak areas, and help the immune system to fight whatever is going on, like we were originally designed to do. This is what I believe, and a lot of people believe the same, that we actually, our bodies were designed to heal ourselves. Now, it sounds a bit far-fetched when you say, I go into the future, I tap into tomorrow's world medicine, and I go into the past to use different dimensions, and then I mix all these up together, take the positive out of each one. I go into the inner Earth's core and work with another dimension. Well, I've always thought out of the box, and I've always just gone with it. I've never taken no for an answer. If anyone says, no, you can't do that. Well, how do you know? How do you know you can't do something if you don't give it a go? And I am telling you the truth. That is what I do. I've got a floating brain, and it can be a bit of a nightmare for people around me, you know, because it floats off into the right side, but it's not very good with the left side. Trust me, it's not. Now, I do honestly believe that this sort of thing, you can come into at any time. You know, I've had people over 80 and say, they've come in, you know, when I was working in England, they've come in and they've said to my husband, you know what, I don't believe any of all this. She's made me come, you know, glaring at the wife. I might just sat there and said, tell me what you think on the way out. And he's come out, used to be a prisoner of war, come through everything. He said, I never thought that I would have to change my opinion at this age. So I think it's good, actually. I think it's good to say, you know what? No, I didn't believe in it. And no, I can't get my head around all these different things. But don't you think it's good to say, well, it's not going to hurt, is it? If it can't hurt, chances are it can help. I've just got another one come through. It's just like a hotline. I always fly by the seat of my pants. I don't have a proper script. You know, I wait until the day and see what is sniffing the wind, basically. And here is another one that went onto the machine. This is just what they say. On leg, I went to the beach 3 weeks ago. It was hot. So whilst playing badminton, that I put on suntan. Within a day, I had red angry spots down my legs, arms and tops of my feet. Carol, as always, offered to work her magic using her medicine machine, and within 2 days, they had definitely lightened and were no longer hard to touch, and now they have practically disappeared, leaving my skin soft and supple. I don't know how Carol does it, but I can see the proof that her medicine machine works. Thank you, Carol, so much. It was really bothering me. On my breast, I have been diagnosed with keratosis mark on and under both breasts. I went to see Carol to see if she could treat it as I wanted to avoid laser treatment. The skin under my right breast is much more marked than the left one. Carol treated the left one first, and that has significantly improvement, and the keratosis is much fainter. The left has some initial wear, and the keratosis marks are disrupted and have improved. More treatments needed, but definitely greatly improved. I feel what happened was, with this, I said to her, I wrote back a quick thing, and when I treated your legs on the machine, you noticed improvement slightly on the right breast at the same time. Yes, that's right. Well, no, I wasn't working on her breast. I was working on the skin. But what happened was, the legs took everything they needed, and some of it went into the breast. And this is what happens. When the healing goes in, it's like a light coming into a dark tunnel to the body. It sees it coming in and thinks, oh, yeah, you know, I want some of this. And this is why when I do the anti-aging treatments for the face, which is another thing, I say quite clearly, if you've got anything really, really seriously wrong, I'm not going to do it, because what will happen, you'll be disappointed because the healing will be dragged into where you're seriously ill. And another thing, of course, when we're ill, it shows on their face. So I have to be honest with people. If I really, really do think it's not going to work or it's the wrong time, I will say. So anyway, that is that little story from the sanctuary, and we will see what happens at the end of the program with Rose. The last one was Fatima with her legs and her breast, and the one that we will be hearing from later is Rose. But right now, who we are going to be hearing from is a special guest. Well, they're all special, as you know. I call them special. They're all special. Anybody that takes the time and makes the effort to come on here is special. So the next guest, better make sure I get the labels all right, is Sue Knight. She's Chief Executive of the Confederation of Healing Organisations, CHO, Registrar of the British Register of Complementary Practitioners, BRCP. And she's got a very long, interesting story, I'm sure, but it's very difficult because we have to condense it down. But it's interesting because working her way from being a healer to then opening the door to help other healers within this organisation, it's enabled her to see things from all points of view. And I think experience, as I've always said, is priceless. It's absolutely priceless. So, what's going to happen now is Sue's going to come on and you're all going to listen, hopefully. Okay?
Hi, Carol. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello. Hi, can you hear me?
Sue. Yeah, hi. Hello, Sue.
Good to speak with you finally.
I know. Do you know what? You notice I'm always a little bit hesitant because, you know, it's like walking the plank. I can't see you. I just hope that you're there. Yes, I was trying to think, you know. We've never actually spoken, have we? Not verbally.
No, we haven't. We've emailed, but we haven't actually spoken. Yeah.
No, we've had little banters about the grandchildren and things like that, haven't we? But not...
That's right.
We've never, you know... I was trying to think today and I thought... Had we? And I thought, no, we haven't.
No, we haven't.
Anyway, here we are. So we'll see what happens now. So I'm going to ask you a few questions. I mean, we could talk all night because there's so many things that you've done and so much that you know. But there's always another day. And
there is.
And, you know, hopefully you might come on and answer some more questions. But this is what I've got, which I think people remember. These are new people that are interested in your story that don't know nothing about you. So mm-hmm. How old were you when you realized you were meant to do healing?
I was in my late 30s, actually. And again, I don't know if people sort of believe in synchronicity, but that's sort of coincidences that are more than coincidence. I basically was reading an advert, or rather a piece in our local paper, a double page spread, and it was all about healers in the local area. And one of the pictures really sort of jumped out at me. He looked friendly, and he was dressed nicely, and he just really stood out to me. And my mum at the time had carpal tunnel syndrome in her wrists. And I said to her that I would take her to see him. She'd been to a healer in the past. She'd been to, her and my dad had been to a healer when I was very young. So I was sort of brought up knowing what they were about, if you like. And we went along to see this gentleman, and I was sat there with my little baby son on my knee at the time. And basically, we got chatting, and I ended up joining him on his closed circle and then invited to learn all about healing. I took a 2-year course with him about healing and sort of went on from there, really. The organization that we belonged to, that we were doing the training through, belonged to the Confederation of Healing Organizations, so I sort of represented... I ended up becoming chair of this healing organisation that we belong to, and I represented them at the CHO's board meetings. And then from there, and this is over a period of, about 10 years, I guess. So within that 10 years from there, I was invited to join them as a trustee on the board. And then in 2012, I was invited by the board to, we had a meeting, and they decided that it would be a really good idea to have somebody to work full time on the CHO to actually take it forward, because there was a lot that we could do. And they invited me to apply for the job. And I couldn't quite believe it. I couldn't quite believe my luck that I actually got the job. There were other CVs that they looked at, but they didn't even interview them, to be honest. They looked at their CVs and they did all the right things, but actually they decided that my experience and my knowledge of the CHO as well did. And here I am, still in the job. That was 2012, so they haven't got rid of me yet.
do you miss the hands-on?
No, I still do it. Well, actually, no, I'm not doing it at the moment. I've still got my practice, but I'm actually, since the pandemic, I've been doing it via Zoom. And actually, I do have one client in America, believe it or not. So, yeah, I've been doing it by Zoom and getting some great feedback from that. I had to sort of adapt what I did, but it works. You know, it works. It still works. In the end, it's all about energy, isn't it?
We have to be versatile, don't we, Sue?
We do.
You know,
we do.
And so when looking at your, I mean, there must be so many, it's a big question to ask, but looking at your work and some of the things that you've done, if you have to say what was the most profound event that's really left it with you, you know, that feeling if you never ever did anything again, you've done that, where you've done something where something that you never really thought you could do and had a real effect healing wise on somebody's life and basically on yours too.
I think actually that's probably mostly come about through those I've helped who have had cancer or some form of cancer. One lady in particular stands out for me because it was quite early on in my healing career, actually. And basically, she knew she was dying. She had acute myeloid leukemia, and she knew she was dying. She didn't have much time left. But her courage and her bravery, facing that, you know, she had everything planned out down to the last detail. She planned out her service and her plot and everything else. She knew exactly what she was doing. And basically, the healing really helped her just to relax and stay calm and to transition. It helped her soul to transition. Sometimes that's what it's about. It's not always about helping somebody to get better in whatever form that takes. And certainly, as you've said yourself, we don't cure. We never guarantee to cure. We can't do that. That's part of our code of conduct. We wouldn't say we cured at all. So this lady used that to help her face death. And she did it with such grace. And she was always very, very grateful about the healing she received. And more recently, there was a gentleman who also, he came to me for a long number of years. And in the last few years, he'd got prostate cancer. And because of lockdown, I didn't see him. He didn't want to do Zoom sessions either. So the few emails I'd had from him didn't let on to me that he'd actually taken a turn for the worse. And of course, the next thing I knew, I was being contacted by his wife, and I was contacted by his wife to say he passed away, and I was invited to the funeral, which was a great honour, because over here in England, we were restricted. There were only 30 people allowed to a funeral at the time. And I was invited along to the funeral, and just hearing the difference that healing had made to him, the way he had changed, the way he had been empowered to embrace his whole spiritual side, if you like, and hearing from his family the difference that it made to him was just mind-blowing, just absolutely mind-blowing. And, you know, I don't take credit for that. I am there as a vehicle, if you like, for that healing energy. And it made such a difference to him. And I just thank goodness that I was able to do that, to help him, you know. And I know it made a difference to his journey.
Well, I think it's not just his journey, as you say, the whole of the family.
Yeah.
You know, not just one person, is it? It's that whole of that family. You know, that experience has totally enlightened them into a whole different mindset. And to know that it went in a totally relaxed, open way, you don't know what would have happened had you not done the healing, do you? The whole thing could have been totally different. It could have been quite, you know, quite sad, miserable, you know, much more of a devastating, traumatic passing.
Absolutely.
This is it, you see. This is what I say to people. It's where the starting point is. You know, if basically you've got the vicar next door, all you can do is that. You know, you know what I'm saying? If the vicar's waiting in the wings and they've virtually been given the last rites, that is all you can do. But if you say, is that all? But it isn't all, is it?
No.
It's absolutely beautiful to be part of that. I always think that.
It's a great privilege. It really is.
Well, I think it makes you humble, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt I was just so humbled being at that funeral service. That's exactly how I felt. I felt very humbled by the fact that, you know, I was able to help in that way. And as you say, yes, the family was really, they'd really opened up to it. And he was a very, very different person in the years that I'd known him, from the time I first met him to the time that I last saw him. So, yeah, just completely different.
Would you say that, you know, that he used to be angry, but he was a lot more happier in it? I know it's a silly thing to say, someone's dying, but did you feel that he was happier in himself than what he used to be?
Yes, absolutely. He was... more accepting of his lot, if you like. Yeah, he was very much happier, even with the cancer, you know. There were times, yes, he was angry about having it, but again, it helped him. He knew it was part of his journey, and his spiritual beliefs through the healing helped him understand that. So, yeah, absolutely.
So it helped him go through another door, just like opening the door and walking through it so easily, basically.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So what advice would you give to others? And what is your opinion? Because you, like I said earlier on, you know, you've done all sides now, haven't you?
I have. I mean, what would I say? A good healer? Oh, gosh, that's a how long is a piece of string.
Well, we don't want to talk about
it. Okay. I'll tell you what is really important. It's something. I mean, I used to teach healing, and I always used to say to my students that they had to learn how to love themselves before they could love others. You know, and that's a biggie for people. That's a real biggie. You have to be compassionate. Definitely, you have to find compassion in your hearts, and non-judgmental.
Well, I think yes, as well. I think. Even when people sometimes come over as not being very nice, I think you've got to care and love them, whoever
yeah.
they are, whatever they're like.
Yeah.
And yes, you have to love them and care about them more than yourself when you're working with them.
Yeah.
That's what I find.
Yeah. If you think of that sort of, if you think it's healing is about love in the end, okay?
Exactly.
So it's about non-conditional love. And if you think about the way a dog loves you, for instance, or a cat or whatever, that is non-conditional, and they just love you for who you are. It doesn't matter what you do to them, they still love you. And that's exactly what healing's about. It's non-conditional love. It's just being able to give to people, being able to give them that love and that compassion, and to be there for them, to create that space for them. But honestly, again, go on.
I think it's something that is inside of you, though. I think you've got to be that way. I don't think you can suddenly be taught to be that way. I think that, you know, you have to have that loving inside of you, that capacity inside of you.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Don't you?
I believe that very often there is some sort of event in someone's life that kind of introduces them to a spiritual lifestyle, if you like, or towards healing. I've heard lots of stories that people have some sort of traumatic event, actually, sometimes, but it doesn't have to be trauma. It just has to be a major event, and it just has to be something that sort of opens them up, and they suddenly realize actually what life is about, you know? And realize that there is a spiritual side to life, and that opens them up to start being curious. We're all able to be healers, you know. We're all able to be healers, but something has to be that spark that ignites that healing. And some of us, go on.
Yeah, I agree with that. But you know, it's a simple thing that I think. I mean, I haven't been taught this. You know what I'm like, you know. But my feeling is the base of anything, whatever you want to do in the spiritual realm, whether it's healing or teaching or whatever it is, I think the good base, and then you go on from there, I think the good base is learning how to meditate properly, learning how to reach that higher space. And once you can do that, reach that higher space, learn how to, well, be in your dreams, if you like. I mean, when we go to sleep, we wake up, and then where have we been? And it's a bit like that. When you're in a high meditative state, you go off and you come back. But the thing is, before you go, you are asking for help from the higher realms to enable you to fill that right brain up. And that right brain is the base for whatever you want to do. This is what I say to people. You know, I say, what is yours will come to you. Don't you agree, Sue? If once they open up and they say, right, I want to do something, and sometimes they don't know what they want to do. They know they want to help others, but they don't know what. But once they learn how to meditate properly and get into that higher state, then that's it. The rubber hits the road. That's what I
it's
believe.
About...
The
It's about learning to make a connection. You know, that could be as simple as being out in nature and making a connection, and that's what being spiritual is about. It's not about being religious, although it can be. You know, it's spiritual without being religious, if you like. And I think that's a very important distinction to make. And it's about being able to connect. But you see, I'm gonna say to you that I actually feel that being taught it, actually having lessons, having proper training, is a really good basis to start. Yeah, okay, you can go off and you can do it on your own, but actually, learning about healing, taking training in healing, is really important, because it teaches you not just how to make that connection, but also how to be a pure channel. It also explains to you how to be grounded, how to be centered, how to be protected, how to protect yourself and your client, and actually how to really look after your client to be a good practitioner. People don't realize that in the UK, healing is actually registered, it is classed as a complementary therapy. You know, since 2000, the House of Lords complementary, it was a House of Lords select committee, their sixth report, if you want the real terminology about it. And they literally categorised all the complementary therapies, and healing is mentioned in there. So it is a complementary therapy. And there will be some healers out there who are absolutely screaming at the radio at the moment saying, I don't believe that, it's not a complementary therapy, well, sorry, it is. It's categorized complementary therapy. You know, in the end, that's what we're doing. We are helping people. It's a therapy. And it's complementary too.
And it's not an alternative to the mainstream. This is what I say to people. People say, is healing dangerous? And I say, the only time that healing is dangerous is when you don't keep your foot in both camps. You know, I always say to people, have your blood tests, have your scans, go to the doctors. Yeah. Don't rely totally on just healing and your own self.
I agree.
It can, don't you agree, Sue? It can then become dangerous.
But that, you see, again, that with the training... You know, anybody who's a registered healer is going to have a code of conduct to abide by, etc. And that's exactly what they do. They do not say to somebody, stop you taking your medicines or stop seeing the doctor.
No.
Absolutely. You know, you just don't do that.
No.
I mean, that's kind of rule number one about, you know, apart from the whole you don't cure thing. You know, there's a lot to be said for it. And there are more and more training organisations now who are actually working online. As a register, we've actually started looking at more online training, because we recognised that there was a whole market out there of people who needed to learn and actually weren't able to be somewhere in person, whether they were in a different country, or they might be disabled, or they might not have wanted to travel in the whole pandemic thing. There's all sorts of things coming up, and actually we realise that now we've had to look at online training, which is exactly what we've done.
Well, what would you say, because obviously there's a lot of American listeners, what would you say to people in America, you know, how accessible are you for them to learn within your organisation? Can they do courses online, and then is that recognisable as being a healer anywhere, you know, and what is the length of time they are looking at sensibly in all this?
Well, different people do different things, but it's more about how many hours they take. And the standards over here tend to be around 200 hours, okay? And that's including things like home study and case studies and all that sort of stuff. So it really is quite a robust training. But it's also, you know, that 200 hours often takes over, it could take anything from sort of over a year or 2 years or whatever. And a heck of a lot happens to people when they take a healing course. They change. They really, really change. From the time they are students to the time they've actually qualified, they change themselves because they're opening up their own awareness. They're developing themselves. You know, they're different people when they start and when they end a healer training. And it's just, it's wonderful to see, actually. I mean, again, I just felt very, very privileged to be teaching people like I did. I no longer do it. But yeah, if people from America or from wherever, forever in the world want to learn, then, you know, get in touch on our website. There's a list of members on our CHO website. And that is the-cho.org.uk. And they just look up under our About Us. There's a list of members under there. And they would either get in touch with us and say, who does this online? Or they get in touch with the members, have a look at their websites and see who does it. But we have a couple doing online things. One doing Reiki and there's another one doing crystal healing and there's another one doing energetic healing. There's all sorts of stuff going on.
Just because of what's going on, you know, the pandemic, yeah. You know, which we won't get into that at the moment, another time. But, we'd definitely be here all night then. But,
yeah.
So don't let the fact what is going on or distance really stop anybody from thinking that they, oh, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. Because there is an option, isn't there?
Absolutely, there's an option. Yeah. Absolutely, there's an option. There's a lot of people are doing so much online. And actually, as an organisation, we're always looking for collaborations with people, with other organisations, so that we can help our members. And basically, we've just signed up with I can't tell you who it is yet because it's still not official, as in it's still not been promoted publicly yet, but it's a big organisation in the UK and it's all about providing online training. And that's not just for healing, that's other complementary therapies as well. So that it's offering training to a practitioner level if somebody wants to take it. But it's also doing something right from the word dot, so you can have workshops and then you can have sort of a bit more training to give you a little bit more oomph, if you like, and then you can go on to actually become a practitioner in whatever therapy you choose. So that's really exciting, and I think that's about to go live in the next few months. We've just given them a list of training organisations, and they're going to be contacting them and getting it all set up. So it's all very exciting.
There's no chance that you're going to be winding down then, is there?
Not yet. Although so, I have to say that it would be nice sometimes.
I know, but we say that, yeah. Don't we? You know what would happen, don't you?
I wouldn't get bored.
No,
I'd be doing my healing in a different way. I would be going out there and I would still be giving healing then. I would be doing more hands-on healing then because, you know, I'm still doing healing because I work for a healing organisation, which is absolutely the best job ever. You know, I can't believe my luck. So that's a different way of getting healing out there. But you know, I would then, if I retire, I would then do more of my hands-on healing. And I would also spend time in my garden. And my garden is my sanctuary. I absolutely love it.
Oh, and mine. Oh,
yeah.
I tell people, say, what do you do in your spare time? I just go down the market and I'm a sucker. They see me coming and they know that I'm going to go back out of the market with both hands full. I just love it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's been very interesting. I think that there'll be a lot of interest of people wanting to know more about these online courses because it's exciting. It's exciting.
It is.
See, people don't I'm just coming. I've just got the lady ringing in about the skin cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to. So I'm going to let you go, and I'm really pleased to talk to you at last. And perhaps you'll come on again,
Carol.
And maybe there'll be some people ringing in and, you know, and follow
up. Yeah, absolutely. Look, Carol, thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been great. Lovely. Thank you.
Bye.
You take care. Bye-bye.
And you. Bye. Rosemary, Rose.
Hi.
Right. What is the results of your latest thing with your skin?
Oh, well, it's altered a lot. All the sort of inflammation around the edge of it has cleared on the latest treatment, and it's sort of got like a central piece that looks like it's going to come off. And I've had this experience before with the healing, and once it comes off, it usually clears. And it's looking much, much smaller and a lot less inflamed and less heated.
And what did it feel like? Because I remember I said that I was going to make it cold because it needed to be really, really cold. Do you remember?
Yes, and it was really, really hot. Begin with, and it's cooled right down. It's reduced in size. So I'm really excited about it because I've been through this before with you, where you've healed them, and it's looking much, much better. Have you seen the photos?
Well, no, I haven't because we were a bit late starting, and I was terrified. It said there's no show scheduled for 24 hours. I thought, oh no! But I don't know. It was fine in the end. So we were about 10 minutes late. But Sue was fine because she sort of had a good chat and we got everything what she needed to say. So I would have a look at the photo, but I'm frightened if I look at the photo, I'm going to cut you off.
Hold on, I'm just going to get ready because my timer was going, so I need to bring in just 1 second. I'm just clearing that. Don't worry about that. I'm just going to... Sorry, I had a timer going, so I didn't miss it. No, well, I'm looking at the photo now myself, and there's a big... I'm just referring back to the earlier... Oh, yes, you can see... All the inflammation around it has reduced a lot. The trim size and the soreness and the heat around it has gone. So I think it's heading in the right direction.
So was this today? This today, today's machine is, this is from today's.
The actual nose, the sort of surrounding area, has also all calmed down. The colour's altered. It's all sort of calmed, but it's good. Yeah.
Well, it is quite exciting. I can't wait to analyse it. You know what I'm like. I test everything, and I check everything because, well, like I say, you know, you have to. You know, make sure that you are, if things are not working with the healing, you are able then, if it isn't working and there's not enough going on quick enough, and then it starts getting control, you are then able to, you know, go back to the doctors. Though, you know, I always say, Rose, to make sure that you always, you know, I've always said this with you, whatever it is, go and have your blood test, check it out, see what they say.
Yeah.
And it's sensible, isn't it?
Yes. But I think there's a lot of stuff. Yeah, I think it is very sensible. But this energy medicine is, like, it can be really helpful. It can help support the body so you heal. You know, that's my experience of it anyway. It's a sort of major support mechanism for the healing, because sometimes you can do everything and it doesn't work. And what I think it's just, I feel when I've had the treatments, my whole body is sort of responding and trying to bounce back.
Well, I don't know whether you heard it or not earlier on. I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show where I was reading out what you said from last time and then waiting for this. That stress...
No, I didn't hear it.
No, but I said that I didn't go into details and your, you know, about your personal things, but you have had an enormous, absolute enormous amount of stress, haven't you, the last year?
And it seems huge, and it seems these things seem to come out when you're stressed. And I think the whole healing thing calms everything down. It's not just the body, it's not just the physical, from my experience, it's the mind as well, like maybe even more. You know, it's that calming thing that that helps your body heal. You know, stress, I think, is the worst thing.
I know when I've worked on you before, I've said to you, haven't I, I've said, you know, the quite often negative will come out of the ears, it come out of the throat, it works its way out. And so you've got used to the fact that, you know, when anything, anybody else might be a bit worried, but when you get anything coming out of your ears or your nose, you probably think, oh, wow, this is coming out, don't you now?
Well, yes, because particularly with the ears, I find like, and you know, I've been on that long haul plane flight as well, but it was like this release of pressure after 2 weeks. It was like the toxins were coming out and they hadn't found their way out. And when my ears drain like that, I just feel totally different. I can't explain it, but I think there's a lot of tubes up there that can get blocked. And those long haul flights, which I've just done, and you know, from the past when you've helped me with that, that really takes a toll on the body. You know, sometimes you react more than others, but, oh, boy. And sometimes there's a delayed effect. You know, it's not always immediate. It can be a couple of weeks later. And the treatments, the couple of treatments I've had recently with you have really helped those toxins come out of the eyes, the ears, and yeah, the throat's been terrible. And it's, you know, it's really helping.
What would you, I mean, I don't know. I think when you came to me, you'd already been and had a lot of experience with complementary medicine. So it wasn't a new thing to you.
No.
But what would you say to people that are thinking about it, but maybe thinking, oh, you know what, that sounds a bit too good to be true, and... you know, is it all in the mind? What would you say to people who really needed help that were afraid to open up to it? What would you say to them, Rose?
Well, you know, I had experience with it before, but I hadn't had experience with healing like this. I'd had various complementary treatments, but I would say that, well, it's just, to me, it was just amazing because if you try to tell someone else, it's very hard because you've almost got to experience yourself. But I felt that you went, like you scanned my whole body almost. You could sense what was going on. And I think I was very complicated to begin with because there was so much going on, but you sort of worked on the layers. And I think I would say that, like, if you're really interested, give it a try, but you also have to believe what you're doing. You know, I mean, the mind is a huge thing. You've got to believe in it. And energy medicine, to me, is the way of the future because of my experiences with it. And that you don't just give up on one go. You've got to go with it and, you know, do a course or go through the experience. But I just, wow. I mean, you know, like anything, maybe you have to experience it personally, but I just feel that whole energy is like the lost bit. You know, you can do all sorts of other things and it's not working. You can do all the right things, the food, the exercise, everything, but sometimes you just need a bit more if your body's sort of gone over the edge in the wrong direction, so to speak. And I think that's where you hold me back in the right direction, and it gives your body a chance to progress and add to it. But as you know, things can come along in the interim, often out of your control. And even if you're quite good at handling your stress, you know, sometimes you need to go back to it and get a bit more. And it's an ongoing thing, you know. And I think you learn to recognize the signs and recognize when you need help. And yeah, it's like an unraveling.
Do you know what I'm remembering? I'm just remembering something. It's just come into my mind. I remember you when you were sitting in the healing sanctuary, and I had a dream about... Do you remember when I thought you'd had an electric shock?
Yes.
And it turned out... I told you, didn't I? And you were going to have some treatment. You remember this,
yes.
Don't you?
Oh my God! Yes, it's all come back to me. Oh my God! And I went. Yes, I went for the ozone, and the machine broke and exploded. And I'm thinking, oh my God, if I ruin myself for life, is this all ozone where, how it shouldn't be? And you'd already seen it happening. I didn't know what it related to.
Well, no, because I remember I protected you. Do you know what I mean? In my dream, I protected you. Do you remember? It was really odd. It all happened at the same time. And I think...
I forgot about that. Yeah. Wow.
I know. Do you know what? It just suddenly came back to me. I mean, it was quite a while ago now. And it was... I know, and you said, and they, I know, it was so funny, and I said, look, what you've got to remember is the meditative state, the energy in the sanctuary, sitting in the sanctuary is like being in a meditative state, and what happens, you become more telepathic, you become more at one. And I've had this happen, you know, quite a few times where I've sort of suddenly somebody's come into my mind and they said, oh, yeah, thank you for that. And
oh, we've had it lots of times.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I know.
I forgot about
it. I know.
It was amazing.
But you know, these things, though, they might sound simple, but in actual fact, it's quite comforting. You're quite comforted by the fact that actually you're not on your own.
Yes.
That there is another force that connects us all up. And it isn't protective.
I believe that. Very powerful.
I mean, I know when you travel, because you don't travel very well, do you? Because And whenever you say you're travelling, and I say, you know, I'm going to put a protective cloak around you, and you can feel it, can't you?
Oh, for sure, because those long-haul flights really, get all the toxins going. And, you know, sometimes it can be better than others, but they can be really harsh on the body, really harsh. And it can take quite a long time to get over them, and you've helped me a lot with that. It's really good. Oh, yes, and also, you sort of, when you've experienced the energy healing and this sort of work, you increase your intuition, you're more aware of what to look for, as I said before.
Well, I think so. I mean, you've certainly changed quite well. I know you've had a bad time, but you're coming out of it now, and you will go back to what you were before. You were becoming very much intuitive with your own body, weren't you?
Yeah.
Much more in touch, weren't you? I remember.
Yes, definitely. And I just think, I think when I came to you, I was sort of, if you think of a 50% mark, well below that, and then you come up over it and it keeps increasing the more, and you can top up on it, but, you're, it's sort of brought the body back to life, so to speak.
Well, you're coming back to life now. You're going to be back to what you were like before. You're going to perk back up. You're going to perk back
up. That's what we want. I love that energizing. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for sharing.
Well, that's my pleasure. And I don't know if I could have done that before. See, that's another thing, isn't it? You get your confidence up.
Well, I didn't know quite whether you would... I didn't know quite what to do with you tonight. And this is what I said to you. Do whatever feels right for you. If you feel up to talking, but I didn't want to put that pressure. I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that you did. Because it's...
Thank you.
Well, because, you know, a voice says so much more than me reading it off of a piece of paper. And, you know, maybe people might think, oh, well, you know what, she could have added a little bit there. No, you know what I'm like, Rose. Everything is by the book.
Yeah, and you're amazing. And I just say, if anyone was sort of, you know, hesitating, just try it. Just try it and see if it's for you.
Well, it's certainly been for you. And I always say, it's a way of life. This is why I come in the healing sanctuary every day, and it's so odd, you know, because whatever I feel like, I mean, let's face it, everyone, you know, I don't walk around like, you know, with long robes on. I'm quite normal. Well, as normal as anybody would think I was. But I come in here, and whatever's going on, I come in here, and I just sit there, and I can hear it, and I can feel it, and I think, oh... And it's so...
Well, you've been given a gift and you're using it, and all that backup was a fabulous sanctuary. You know, it's not just you just don't go and have one treatment. You've got all that support.
Exactly. And I say to people, it's a way of life. You know, you clean...
Yeah, I think that's right.
It is. You clean your teeth every day. You have a wash every day. You feed yourself, you know, with food and drink. And coming in here is... feeding yourself in your mind, isn't it?
Yeah, nurturing the body and the mind and the soul.
Well, I think we're coming. I think we're coming to the end now. I'm really, really pleased, and I hope everyone's enjoyed it. And we'll keep you posted, won't we, Rose? Keep everybody posted. And thank you all for listening to the end, and see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
You're listening to the News for the Soul radio network. News for your soul. Life-changing broadcasts to souls around the world since January 1997.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
All right, next up today, this Friday, Transformational Learning with Diane Hill. Diane is one of the newer hosts on News for the Soul and brings a huge area of deep learning not previously talked about, at least not in this way. So let's bring her on to reintroduce herself, her show, and what's up for today. Diane, welcome back.
Thanks, Nicole. Happy to be here.
Well, let's get you to do the ever-evolving intro of who you are and what the show is about.
That's a good word for it, ever-evolving. Well, my primary work is doing the transformational healing process that we've been talking about in the previous shows. And I do that work and healing work out of my lodge here in Six Nations. So I live at the Six Nations of the Grand River Territory, which is in Ontario. And the closest town to where I am of any size would be the city of Brantford. But we do have a small village center in the center of Six Nations, and that's called Ashwegan. And it's in Native linguistic talk, it's referred to as Oswege. So it means the place along the place with the willows. It's where the red willows, we have lots of willow trees here in that Grand River Valley. And so the community here is of Six Nations is about, I'm still working back. I'm old enough to still be working back in miles. I don't think in kilometers as yet. So it's about 9 by 9 miles square, and we're situated on that in that Grand River area of the valley, Grand River Valley, and it's quite beautiful. It's rolling hills. It's lots of farmland here, and the community is probably about 15,000 people living here on the reserve. So we're not the largest land base of reserve, but we are the largest population of Native people living in one nation in Canada. So there's probably 15,000 plus living here now. So in literally six different nations, plus those who have married in, are representatives here. So I'm from the Mohawk Nation. My clan is Bear. And so... And I make my home here, and my healing lodge is here where I do the work. It's a privately owned and operated healing lodge, well, owned and operated by myself. And then I have a staff who comes in and assists me with once a month programming. But we rooted our healing model in an indigenous story, in one of our histories of Haudenosaunee people. A lot of our history is passed down through an oral tradition, so there are stories that inform us or educate us. They keep us aware of the belief system that we would carry and pass on from generation to generation in that oral tradition. So my lodge here carries a Mohawk name. It's called Gutnikun Liotsula in Mohawk, and it means the fostering emergence of the good mind. And so that healing lodge, which is both doubles as my home as well as a lodge where people come for their weekend retreats here. So they do weekend healing retreats. And we've just recently rebuilt our sweat lodge. So we're thinking about operating the sweat lodge and opening it up for visitors and for people who come to participate. We're not quite sure what that looks like yet. But or how that's going to operate, because we used to do sweat lodges for people years ago, but then it became so labor intensive that I'm going to have to really look for a dedicated team in order to be able to operate and to make that service, those services available again. Complements the healing model quite well that I use here in the lodge here in Six Nations, and it would actually not just be complementary, but it actually kind of furthers, takes people a little bit further through the healing process and when they're doing their healing work. So I'd like to, you know, look at that more seriously and see how we might be able to operate that. And I need to find a dedicated team to assist me in doing that. So that's in the process, and I'm quite excited about that. To be able to share it, because it connects very much to the land and to the earth and to the elements of fire, water, earth, and air. And we have had ceremonial gatherings here over the past few months where the full moon ceremonies and such, and they've been well attended, and people are interested and people are learning. So I'm quite happy about the land-based work that we've just re-established. So we did it in the earlier days, kind of fell away, and we're coming back to it. And it seems like it's a good time to come back with COVID, the pandemic affecting people's activities. And we were homebound, and being able to, you know, work with the land and reconnect to the land, I didn't realize how much I missed it until we started to have that opportunity. So COVID gave us that opportunity to rethink and reconnect and reestablish ourselves. So that's awesome. I'm really happy to talk about that today. Those that kind of journey.
Wow. No, I don't, speaking of this, I can't think of any experience I've had with, communities, indigenous communities inviting the general public in for sweat lodge services. That's really cool. Is that something that's been done in other areas before?
Well, no, that's why I'm saying it's something that we've had to rethink and reestablish. And and thanks to COVID, it provided us with an opportunity to slow down, provide everyone with an opportunity to slow down and be like focus more on what we, on life, you know, things that we were too busy before to sort of pay attention to. And then COVID gave us this giant pause where we were able to stay home and refocus. And then part of that refocusing led me back to rethinking what we used to do long, like many years ago when we first set up with Sweat Lodge work here. In those days, I'm going back now maybe about 20 years ago, we used to get together as mostly largely First Nations people, but we had non-Native people living among us and working with us. And so I was one of the ones who started opening that up here in my area to non-Native peoples because they were allies to us. They were helpful. They were advocates. They also came with many of their own gifts, and they were contributing. I didn't see them as anything different than us, really, right? It's just, you know, the color of their skin didn't matter because we were all focused on offering spiritual, and we all shared that in common, and we had that common interest. So I remember people coming and some camping and some staying in the house and people being together sharing our teachings with one another. And even though we came from different traditions and different backgrounds, I remember how enriched I was. And they too, you know, it was reciprocal. They were sharing what they knew around from their way of working in a spiritual tradition. And then we would share our ways of working and our spiritual cultural tradition. And it was such an enriching experience. And then what happened was is that it I don't know if you've ever been in a sweat lodge yourself, Nicole, but or been around them. So you know how much they're labor intensive, eh? So so you have to collect the rocks, the stones that would be used in there, which become in ceremony, they become our grandfathers and our grandmothers. And we had to, collect those. We have to build a lodge out of saplings, collect the rocks, make sure we have the wood needed to fire as many stone as we need. And sometimes you can get up to 28 stones in a sweat lodge. And so that takes quite a bit of wood to be able to fire and to keep them hot because you need them, like, red hot. They need to be quite warm before you take them in. Then we had to gather the medicines, and we had to clean the medicines, and then we had to, in our area, we don't have the cedar connection that people have in northern communities, so we would have to find other things. We would pick cedar to rim the lodge, and we might have to use towels or blankets to be able to put down for the people to sit on. And so, of course, the tarps that are covering this lodge, they need to be breathable. They need to be layered because we're in the mother's womb when we're in the sweat lodge. So we have to make sure that it's dark, that it's like pitch black dark in there in order to do our ceremonies. And so it takes a lot of work to get ready. And then there's the actual ceremony itself, and depending on the conductor of that ceremony and depending on what the focus of the sweat lodge is about, because there can be teaching sweats and healing sweats and sweats to just give thanks and sweats for families and sweats, you know, there's all kinds of different purposes that you would use the sweat lodge for. And depending on what they are, the healing sweat being the most difficult, meaning the most, and also the longest. So you could go into a lodge, say, at 8 o'clock in the evening, and depending on how many people were in your lodge, if you had up to 10 or 12 people in that lodge, and it was for healing, and you were offering the opportunity for everyone to heal. You could, and they're talking in that lodge for so many rounds, we call them. And you could actually go in at 8 p.m. at night and come out, and it would be sunrise the next day.
Mm.
And I've been in lodges that where that's happened, eh, where I could hear the birds singing, and then we're coming out, and it's the sun is coming up. And it's quite beautiful when that happens, but it's also quite amazing because it's almost like the lodge itself is timeless. So when you're in that yeah. kind of ceremony and people are releasing and grieving and sharing what they need to share, you know, and nobody gets cut off. So people are allowed to speak what they need to say, consuming. But at the same time, it's timeless when you're in there because you're all in there and with the purpose of helping people, right, and helping yourself and then listening and supporting others who are going through whatever they're releasing or whatever burdens that they are laying down. So we, you know, those experiences are very, very special, and you can't really, I've never, in my whole life, I've been in saunas and other places and sweats and other communities. I remember doing one down in Mexico a few years back, and they're quite special opportunities. They're not that common because, as you say, most people wouldn't open their lodge up to provide services for non-Native yeah. people. But we were a group that were kind of cohesive in our own, connected through our own work and with spiritual practice. So it wasn't that. It didn't feel like we were offering services at that time, and really, really, we weren't, because what we were helping ourselves, eh, and then helping each other. And so that kind of nostalgia, as I was, you know, over the time of COVID and being home and my, you know, being limited in what we could do here, I started to refocus on that. And then I put in one of those questions of what if, eh? What if we did open it up and offer services? For non-Native people, what if we did teachings, and what if we were able to help people in this way, and what would it take to do that, and what kind of team of dedicated workers would we have to have, and would it be possible? You know, all these questions were coming to mind, and of course, for me, the answer is, well, why don't you just try it and see where it goes, right? Try it and see what happens. And see if people will even come. Maybe they won't come. And in what ways would they help? Or would they be willing to pay for the service? Or where do we get the supplies? And how, like, all these questions sort of started coming up into my mind last year when I was asked to teach a group of Aboriginal workers who were part of a Native Friendship Center about 2 hours away from me here in Six Nations, and the executive director there had a young staff. They were in their late 20s, early 30s, and she had six young people, and she said, Diane, she said, these are special young people. They're Native in ancestry, but they grew up in the city, and she said, and they've missed out a lot on their cultural training and cultural teachings. Would you be willing to teach them and help them build a sweat lodge, because we're coming into some land here in the urban area, and we would like to recreate a sweat lodge and to have that service available for our Native community that live in this urban center. And so that's how it kind of started, Nicole, is that opportunity came up last October. And mm-hmm. so six staff came from the Urban Aboriginal Friendship Center. And they came with tents. They were camping out, and they were here for 5 days. And when word got out that we were teaching about sweat lodge building, and we were teaching them about, you know, how it all worked in a general terms, but the main focus was, can you build one? And that's where I got my helpers, and I had some teachers come and join me. And we ended up with 25 people, and we were, you know, thank God we were all outdoors, because it was a time when we weren't supposed to be gathering in that numbers. But sometimes you can't prevent people from coming. Like, we don't, like, if people show up or they hear about it, or they show up and they want to help and they want to contribute, our teachings are such that we shouldn't really turn them away, right? We should, and if they're keen to learn and they're there with a good heart and they're really focused, then like, let's work with them. So we ended up from six people, including the teachers. So it wasn't 25 people who joined us. It was 25 people in total, counting the teachers and the staff and the people who were here as helpers. We ended up with a group of 25 for 5 days. And they built this most wonderful, beautiful, magnificent sweat lodge that I have in my on my back property here now in Six Nations. And it was done absolutely perfect. They took the time and care and attention. The only issue we had with it, because it was perfect in every way, was its size. And it was they built a lodge that could hold, I'm going to estimate, probably 15 to 20 people in there at one time, so it was really quite large. And so that was where the idea of teaching lodge came into mind when I saw its size. Because, you know, we said this is how it looks, and we explained to them how to put it together and how to bend the bows, and everything was going into place. But we never corrected them or anything on size. We just let them sort of go ahead and put it together the way that so that they could learn in the way that they thought it should go. And it ended up to be perfect, except that size was very large. So it's practical for a teaching lodge to have a sweat that big. It's impractical for a healing lodge, where we would want a little smaller lodge that would hold at least six people. But this one here can hold double that, maybe three times, 18 people in that lodge. So what we started to realize that what, in fact, that the staff, the young staff had built, they built us a teaching lodge. So we said, okay, well, we could do explain ceremony, and we could teach. And in fact, that's what they're going to do. They'll be back probably in August, now that some of the COVID restrictions have lifted. They'll probably come back in August, and then we'll actually go into the lodge sometime in August or early September. And that's where they'll get the teachings around how the ceremony works and what the directions mean and everything that they haven't gotten to date. So they'll be actually able to experience a sweat lodge ceremony. And then they should be ready to go home and build a lodge in their own home territory, and then know how what it takes to operate it, and then be able to assist whoever they're going to secure as a sweat lodge conductor for their area, that they'll be able to support and know how it runs and how it functions, and be able to assist in a really good way. And that means they become the dedicated team for that area, right? And then that's what I'm saying is I would like to have a similar team in my own area. So it means, basically, it means opening it up to the general public and seeing who shows up, and then from that group, seeing who's committed, eh? Who's really into this and wants to learn and wants to further their own understanding, but also to acquire the knowledge and to be able to practice it. That's kind of what I'm looking for. So I can't get that unless I open it up, right? So I have to open it up to the general public. And teachings allow us to open it up to people of all nations, because if you really look back at some of the cultural teachings, my own in particular, there is a story in our oral tradition, in our culture, that talks about that great tree of peace that has roots that grow up, reach, and extend in four directions. And the teaching is very clear. It says any nation, any person of any nation, is welcome to lay down their weapons of war, eh? Whether it's weapons of war nowadays can even be verbal, eh? And lay those down in order to follow one of those routes to that tree of peace, and then participate, right, in the activities. So the tree of peace is for everyone. It wasn't just for Six Nations people or Aboriginal people. It was for any nation, for any people to come, who are willing to learn about the great law of peace and those teachings. And then you would take shelter, they would say. You would take shelter under that tree of peace, and you would become that yourself, eh? Looking and being taught and trained and being able to achieve that, first of all, inner peace. And then inner peace leads to the outer peace that we experience. And so so that's kind of where I was at when I was thinking this through just a few months ago, actually, because things were starting to open up, and then we got closed down again. But when it was opening up there, we had time to be able to clean the land and to clear certain aspects while we were home. And that's when I started to reminisce, say, and I started to feel nostalgic about the times we did have here. And I thought, why not? Why not? Why not consider it? Most people don't utilize it or offer their services for that. You're right. It wouldn't be open to the general public or Native people or non-Native people. But I think it's time now. I think the times have changed. And people are awakening and becoming more aware and are seeking spiritual processes. And so that's why I'm considering it now. And I won't know till I try it, right?
It's a great gift and opportunity for people. I've literally never heard of it before. So it's, you always had to sort of have an in, you know, to get in. And this is huge. You know, since it's come up in our natural flow of conversation, we should get you to explain and describe, if you can, how it is different. Like, this is not like going into a sauna. There's no night and day comparison. I mean, a completely a deep, profound, and it is timeless. It's this altered state. And I've always attempted to explain it to people that I've spoken with who had never been through one. But maybe can you explain what that is and what the connection is?
I'll give it a shot. This is what's coming to mind now, and I tend to go with what appears in my thought patterns. But what's coming to mind at this moment is to I just got back from a 10-day road trip, and I was in another Native community, and I met a young woman there in my workshop, in our Good Mind workshop, in the healing weekend we had there. And we had 10 women signed up, and there was myself, my nephew, and my son who were in charge, and we were teaching this process of healing and then going to take the people through the work. And this one young woman presented herself to me, and it was quite cool and magical, people would say, because she had a dream. And she said in the dream, she said, I was there in the dream, and I was obviously in need of help, and I was talking to this woman, and this woman kept, I didn't know this woman, I had never met her, I had nothing, no point of reference for her at all, but there was this woman in this dream, and she kept telling me and talking to me about my healing and my wellness, and she said that I needed to engage in all of that work because I needed to be ready to help this person. And she says the woman in the dream pointed to this man who was standing there. And once again, same thing, I didn't know who the man was. There was no point of reference for who he was. But you kept adamantly saying to me, you need to do your work. And when you are able to do your work, you'll be able to assist him. And you kept pointing to this man. And she said, and this was a really vivid dream. And she said, I didn't even know if I was awake or whether it was a dream. She said, it was so real. And she said, but I didn't understand it. It was kind of out of the ordinary, like not the normal dream, right? And so it stood out to her in her mind. And so she said that was a few years ago. And so in the workshop, we did a workshop, we call it Real School, and my son leads that one, and then I support him. And so we were supporting my son, Yusufa Daniel, is his Mohawk name, and it means he changes things. And so so he was leading the workshop, and this young woman showed up with two of her daughters who wanted to attend. And so we met them there, and she stayed for 2 days, and it was on the second day that she came and told me about the dream. And she was crying, and she was shaking, and she was having a hard time. And she said, you know, Diane, she says, I don't know you. You don't know me. She said, and, you know, and thank you for coming to our community. But she said, I have to tell you this dream. And then she says, and it's really hard for me to share this because I don't say these things to people. I don't talk like this to people. And she says, but I need to tell you about this dream because you are the woman in the dream. And she says, and your son, DeSaguadenius, he was the man in that dream. And so I asked her to tell me more, and as she was talking to me, she was crying because she was nervous. And she says, oh, my God, she says, this is so hard. And so she was nervous, and she started to cry because the whole telling of the dream was so emotional. And as she was telling me, I, too, was resonating with what she was saying, like as true. So I could feel in my heart and in my body that what she was telling me was not just a general, everyday, made-up dream, like, you know, I had a dream, you know, that kind of thing. Listen to it. This was actually a dream of a quality that was being very spiritually directed. So I could feel the energy resonate, what they call the vibration, eh? So I could connect to what she was saying. I could feel it. And I started to cry. And so here we are, and I'm crying, listening, and I'm nodding my head as I'm listening to her, and I'm going, oh, my God, that I can feel the power of your words and what you're saying, and all I can say to you is that I believe you and that this is that this resonates, this vibrates in me, in my heart as true. And so that feeling of when you intuitively know or you strongly sense and you can feel emotional or feel the vibration and it brings out this like there, it was good feelings. It wasn't the fear. Like she said, I'm so afraid to tell you this, but really when she was telling, she was also speaking her truth. And so I said, well, you can say it's scary, or you can just say that maybe in the speaking or the telling of this truth, that it's coming through as an excitement, more as an excitement, as an energy that's able to move through both of us, that brings us together in this shared experience that says that what we're experiencing here is more than just a dream you would tell from your head. You're actually speaking this dream from your heart, and everything that's connecting is very felt very deeply. And she looked at me and she said, that's it. That's true. She said, I understand that. And I said, she says, oh my God, thank you so much. She said, what you just showed me in your telling and your explanation, she says, is I can feel now the love. So the love and acceptance, that energy of love and acceptance, when you're in a ceremonial experience in something like a close quarters, because a sweat lodge is a fairly small enclosure, right? Like I said, 50, even if you put 15 people in a sweat lodge, you're packed in there fairly tight. And so it's in a close quarters where the energy is being shared. So the energy and the vibration of what people are sharing emotionally touches people deeply. And you can also find yourself vibrating or resonating or sometimes even having these tears of whatever you're releasing. Sometimes it's excitement, sometimes it's relief, sometimes it might start off as painful, but as you speak about it and bring it out, that energy moves through the people in the lodge. And so it is a deeply shared, deeply heartfelt experience. And it's being created by the people in that space that is able to open themselves up and open their hearts up to this deeply personal and deeply truthful, it's very, very truthful level of sharing that you wouldn't necessarily get in a sauna or in some other experience where you're sort of sitting there and you're in your own space. And certainly you're in a sweat lodge, you're in your own space. But the level of conversation or the depth of sharing that goes on in a sweat lodge is what creates that very special experience. Eh? So even if the people are not saying a whole lot, your sweat lodge conductors and your doorway, four doorways, because in that lodge you need those four directions, eh? So east, east, south, west, and north. And there are in each one of those four cardinal directions. And even if you just went in a lodge and the only people talking was your sweat lodge conductor and his or her helper who is representing the eastern door keeper, and they are singing songs. The songs that they're singing for each one of those doorways and each one of those four directions can be deeply felt and can resonate the vibration of that music or the voice and the sound and the drum that's being played in there, or sometimes just the shakers. It creates that vibration that touches people very much the way that if people would, what I'm seeing now is people are really getting into Tibetan singing bowls, so they understand that vibration and how it touches them when somebody's playing a singing bowl in a room or in a meditation circle. And it's similar to that when you're in a sweat lodge, that you can feel the vibration and the resonance can resonate with that, much like if you hit a tuning fork and your whole body would start to shake in unison with that tuning fork. It starts to filter throughout all of the people, and you feel it as deeply felt, heartfelt, very personal experiences. Even if you weren't talking, your people who are running the sweat lodge would give that vibe off. And that's very special because you can even do that with the sound of your voice and in the prayers. And what I've noticed is that if your sweat lodge conductor can speak, do opening prayers in the language, in a native language, those languages are very much rooted to the earth itself. So you've got that resonance and that deeply felt vibration coming through in indigenous languages or native people's languages. You can still do it in English, but I noticed that there's another different vibration if you're able to do it in a native language. It's very special, to hear those songs and to be able to sit inside. And yes, it's warm. There's heat in front of you. You know, the conductor is putting on, scooping on water, medicine water, onto those rocks, and it's creating the steam. And then the songs are going on and the prayers are going on. And if there's an opportunity, depending on the type of lodge that's being run, for people to share, then their voices are also added to that mix. And that resonance and that vibration and that opening up of your feelings and sharing, that goes very, very deep into the soul, right? And that's what makes it special. That's what makes it different than going to a sauna or a steam room, right? Which many people probably have those experiences of sitting in a sauna and in the steam room and sweating that way, but the ceremony and the prayers and the medicine water and the it's just special. People make it. People add to it. It's a nice experience on its own, but when you add the people and their voices and their heart,
everything you've described is huge and well articulated, of course, about how it all comes together energetically and the connections. But whenever I've been, I feel or sense a very tangible presence of spirit or literal ancestors. What about that aspect?
Yes. Yeah. And those songs that they're singing, once again, depending on the purpose, you can open those doors, right? And when you open those doorways, they're like portals into the spirit world, where those energy beings, which are palpable, like it's tangible, and those beings can then come in and enter into the lodge as well, and that's where you would have that tangible presence. I've been in lodges where they wouldn't necessarily open that doorway, but they would acknowledge those doorways and acknowledge the beings that can come through each one of those doorways. So you can get animal spirits coming in, which are very tangible. And the animal spirits, I was in a sweat lodge one time where the blue jays, you could hear the blue jay call in the sweat lodge. You could feel the wings, flapping by your face. Like you could feel that bear and the energy of the bear spirit come in. And, you know, and so these are experiences that are really, like you say, more tangible. But then we also have people that go into those experiences experience, and they miss it all, right? They wouldn't necessarily feel anything, or they wouldn't necessarily even have that tangible and kind of wonder what we were saying when we gave greetings to the bear who just entered this lodge, right? People wouldn't necessarily know that, and that's what my past experience was about. But now, when we're thinking about operating and opening as a service, what we're thinking about now is that people need to be taught to help to open up their feelings, and so that they can have a more meaningful sweat lodge experience. Because without that opening, without you being open, then you might as well just go to the sweat lodge or the sauna at the Y, local YMCA, because it's not going to give you the meaningful, tangible, energetic experience that you could have if you were ready for that. So some people are very much in their heads, eh? And so they'll miss the stuff that goes on the level of the feelings and of the level of the spirit. So we're well aware that those things happen. So we're also talking about how can we better prepare people to go in to have that experience, or do we just, you know, or not? Like we're in those kinds of conversations. I think people should be prepared, because otherwise you might as well just stay uptown and go to a steam room in a spa somewhere, and you'll have mm-hmm. a similar experience rather than what we would be offering here, like through a sweat lodge, which is about connecting spiritually and about healing and about wellness. And it's about the opening up of one's spiritual senses, eh? And I think you need to be prepared for that as opposed to just kind of put in one just for the sake of, because you wanted to do it and you wondered what it was about, eh? Curiosity. There's a lot of people curious. But at the same time, that curiosity doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a meaningful experience in there either.
Yes, indeed. I think I was plunked there because I was ready and I needed to see some stuff and some things. So that
well,
was
you,
a...
yeah. Well, you yourself have some. You're very open and have your own gifts, eh? To channel in messages and things like that. So yeah, you would have been ready for something like that.
Unbeknownst
but
to myself. So what are the other things about this? Like, say people listening to this show think, oh, I'll just go build a hut in my backyard. And, you know, who runs the lodges and how do they get to be allowed to do that?
Well, from my experience, it's just where I was leaving off there. My last comment is that I've met people who are not ready for sweat lodge, but they thought they were, and they thought they could do it because they thought that was the place where they were going to feel something or see something or sense something. And so the people who run those lodges are at that level where they're able to feel energy. They're able to see things, whether it's through the mind's eye or sometimes literally like visions appearing, like a daydream, like that kind of those kinds of experiences. But the people who are running sweat lodges are people who should be able to connect to the energies on various levels, eh? So emotional energy, mental, spiritual, you know, you need to be able to connect to those different levels of the human experience. And when I say some people who are not ready, those are people who were well-educated people. They were very culturally raised in cultural families. Some of them could even speak the language, but they had absolutely no connection to emotion or to heart. And so, yeah, they were running sweat lodges, but it felt to me like they were running a sweat lodge more from rote, you know, how you memorize something and then you're able to put it out there because you've memorized it, you know the words, it's by rote. But their heart wasn't in the experience. And so, yeah, they ran a sweat lodge, and yes, they did all the ritualistic type and proper protocol and proper things, but it lacked in the spiritual experience. Like there really wasn't any beings that entered into it. There wasn't any necessarily emotion shared in a level. And I've been in lodges that have been run by people who were not that open on the emotional side. And the experience is very different than when you have a sweat lodge conductor who is emotionally aware and emotionally ready and is a very heart-based and heartfelt person. So that when they're giving those prayers, they really mean it, eh? Like they really feel thankful. They really are grateful. And that quality of that gratitude and that thankfulness creates a beautiful sweat lodge conductor. It offers an opportunity for what we call the extraordinary experiences to occur beyond the ordinary, eh? The extraordinary or the extraordinary experience. So you'll have sweat lodge conductors of all those different levels of awareness and different levels of understanding, different levels of knowledge, and people will go ahead and conduct their lodges. So there's nobody out there policing people and saying you're a sweat lodge conductor and you're not. There's nobody doing that. So people can actually go ahead and if they want to create one, and they can run one because they have the mechanics of it. They know how to build it. They know how it works. And then there are those sweat lodge conductors that are very, very much open and so open. They're connected to the elements, say, of fire, water, earth, and air. They're connected to the spirits and the animals and the birds. And they're so connected to those aspects of creation that whenever they run a lodge and they open up themselves and open the doorways up, that these experiences, these extraordinary experiences, then become possible. So you have everybody in between, eh? That between, you know, the ones who have just learned it by rote versus the ones who have they're more open, their energy is more open, and they're really, really connected and well connected to the elements and the energy of creation. Very, very different. So where is the onus on? The onus would be, we would, as a teacher, I would say, you have to be discerning. So going into a sweat lodge with this person doesn't mean, that they weren't qualified, let's say, to do it. They did what they did, and they did what they knew, and they did it to the best of their ability. This was your experience, but there are other people who are running sweat lodges and conducting them from a far more elemental or energetic experience that you might not have gotten from this person who was doing it by rote or doing it because he or she knew how to do that. So people have to be discerning when and so that element of discernment, the onus is on the individual, on, say, me. If I'm the one that wants to go in the sweat lodge, I have to really be in touch with my feelings. And when I meet this person or when I get close to the lodge, if I get a feeling that I shouldn't go in there, I need to listen to that I shouldn't. Something's telling me not to go. I'm going to take that direction. I'm just going to sit out by the fire, and I'll have my ceremony here by the fire where and I'll pass on going in. And so, and the reason why we say this is because it's possible for individuals, and you may have even heard some stories where there were sweat lodge conductors running lodges and inappropriately touching women or having, you know, inappropriate touch and words and things being said in there. And it wasn't because it's the sweat lodge is the problem. The problem is the conductor, the elder, was not in a good place, was not even, sometimes they're not even sanctioned by any people. They just open up and they're running this service in and of themselves, right? So they're not known, but they're still offering the service. And because people are curious and they want that experience, it's real easy to find yourself connect in a lodge, which maybe that wasn't what you planned or you had no idea. So those things happen, eh? And so people need to be aware and they need to be educated to be very discerning. You might want to meet your sweat lodge conductor. You might want to feel them out. You might want to, see where the vibe is and if it feels good and what they're telling you is is practical and seems like it's a safe experience for you, that would be the lodge that I would go in. Because it's possible to be going into lodges where there are people who are not, I don't know what the word is, I'm struggling to find the word, but they're not healthy people, right? That's possible that mm-hmm. you could run into that in the world, eh? But I suppose that's possible in any really kind of spiritual tradition. I think there are places with churches, with ministers. That's what we're finding out with the residential school, that there was,
yes.
Is that there are churches and ministers who were men of cloth or women of faith, and they sexually abuse Aboriginal children, eh? So it's possible in all culture groups, I guess, to have those individuals that are saying they're healthy when they're really not, or, you know, or practicing something when they themselves are not that healthy of an individual and find themselves abusing other individuals. So a person needs to be discerning.
What about safety issues in general, like around too much heat, et cetera?
Once again, that is also on the individual. So this is why I'm saying that for us to offer a service, I would rather educate the people before even letting them in there, right? Even putting, because the aspect of heat, if you need to know yourself and be discerning to a certain level, where there's a level of heat that if you start to get a little bit of woozy, you might want to ask to be let out. And you have that right to ask the sweat lodge conductor to allow you to leave the lodge, hey? And there are people, and I've, even sweat lodge conductors themselves, who will actually not allow a person to leave when it gets to be too much heat, right? There are things, little tricks you can do in there when it's too much heat. Like you can turn your back towards the frame and put your face down near the ground, and the air there will be cooler, and you'll be able to breathe, and you'll be able to take the heat. And that, you know, using that little trick. Another thing is to take in a wet towel, and you can actually breathe through the towel, and it'll cut the heat. Hey, you'll be able to tolerate some of the heat in there. That way, or putting your, putting your face down lower on down to the ground. Like there's those little tricks to do that, but largely it's the individual who's running the lodge usually has some sense of the temperature, or some sense of the comfort, of where individuals are at, so that if somebody is, struggling and you're in touch and in tune with the people in your lodge, you can actually stop and then ask them to leave. I had one lady in one of the lodges that I was doing a few years back, and she wanted to be in a lodge in the worst way. She just always wanted to be in a sweat lodge. She's a Native woman, came from a community. She was part of a program that I was working in, and she really wanted in the worst way to have the sweat lodge experience. But one of the things that I noticed about her is that she had a thyroid issue, and I said, well, you know, tell me a little bit more about your thyroid issue. And so she would explain, you know, how her blood pressure rises, the heat gets through her blood, and, you know, she'd start shaking and this kind of thing. And I said, well, do you know enough when to ask, right, to leave or to sit down if the heat starts to get to you? And she goes, oh, yes, I know enough to do that. But you know what? She didn't. She was so in her head. She so wanted to stay in there that when her body temperature started to rise and she was having a hard time, like, with breathing, she wanted to stay. And I stopped that round, and I said, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to leave, because you're not in here to suffer, and we're not in here to, it's not about danger, hey? And I said, so you need to, at this point, I'm sorry, but you're not going to be able to make it here. And I got a really strong sense and a really strong feeling that you need to go out and you need to cool down. And, well, there's a gentleman out there, he'll help you, the fire keeper will help you, and he'll give you something to drink, and you can just cool down, because it's not safe for you. And at the time, she was really disappointed. Hey, she cried. She didn't want to leave, but she left. And then when we came out and the sweat lodge ceremony was done and we came out, then she was still there sitting out by the fire wrapped in her blanket, and she was drinking, like, the water and things. And she thanked me. And she said, you know what? She said, you were right. I needed to come out. But because I was wanting to experience the whole thing, I was trying to push myself through it, eh? And she said, and I'm glad I came out, because it wouldn't have been good for me to stay in there. She said, I may have passed out on you. And I said, that's right. And that's why I asked you to leave, eh, when you could. And I knew you were disappointed, and I know you wanted to have that complete, full experience. But this was the better, because your safety and your health is more important, eh? And there'll be another time.
I like to highlight that it's not about suffering and it's not about danger. We are already out of time again, and another show behind us. I can't believe how fast it goes. So let's shift it into wrap up and a bit of shameless self-promotion.
Okay, shameless self-promotion. Okay, well, I'm not ready to promote the Sweat Lodge yet, but I am talking about it, and that's what this show gave me the opportunity to do, was to start talking and sharing about my experiences and my consideration, I guess you would call it. And so at one point, I hope to be able to offer this service or this experience to individuals who want to come and pursue that. I'd like to be able to offer that in the future, but not without proper preparation. So maybe what I should be doing is promoting the come and prepare for the Sweat Lodge teachings and experiences, as opposed to actually coming and taking a Sweat Lodge, but come and prepare for that, like be prepared in a workshop setting here, that we would be able to do that. And I have people here who could assist me in preparing you for a Sweat Lodge experience. And whether it would culminate or end in a, like that training would end in you actually taking the Sweat Lodge experience, that's something that I think we could offer. But I think we really need to promote the training, the getting you ready, the prep work that it takes in order to have a safe Sweat Lodge experience, or to have a safe and spiritual Sweat Lodge experience, or to have a safe and spiritually and emotionally cleansing Sweat Lodge experience. So I think that's what I'm shamelessly promoting now, is that process to help people to get ready for that kind of experience. And that's where I'm going to leave it for today, Nicole.
Such an honor and joy to spend time with you again, Diane. I look forward to our next time 2 weeks from now. And in the meantime, Diane Hill's all linked up at newsforthesoul.com. We're back in 30 seconds.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
You're listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading edge health information, and much, much more with featured hosts from around the world. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
All All right, next up, they're back. Love and Healing Solutions with Beth and Gil Jones. Let's bring them on to reintroduce themselves, their show, and what's up for today. Welcome back, guys.
Hey.
What's going on?
Yes.
Hi, we're happy to be here.
Yep.
This has been a really interesting topic, so I think we've gotten a lot of questions, and people are really, really into it. So we're very grateful. I think we chose the right thing for starting out here. Today our focus is on escorting a narcissist to the door. So our whole series so far has been about how to handle a narcissist in your life, at home, at work, everywhere in your life.
Yeah, I think what we've tried to do up to this point is say, here's how to spot one, you know. One of the key pieces of spotting a narcissist is they're not calling into this show. Like, they're not listening to it. They don't see there being any reason they need to grow in their own lives. There's no sense of, hey, I've got some rough edges. You know, narcissists don't go to therapy and say, wow, am I a narcissist? You know, so I remember one time I asked that to one of my counselors, and he goes, Gil, you're like so afraid that you're a narcissist. And he goes, narcissists aren't afraid that they're narcissists. You know, they don't even get to that place where they're asking questions. They know it all. They've got it all taken care of. They know exactly how to exploit people for their own gain. You're just a pawn in their own show. And so the first kind of couple of these that we, you know, went over were about, you know, how to spot a narcissist, and then secondly, you know, how to be someone who can easily spot one, you know, that you're putting in really, really good habits. We talked about five rules to root out a narcissist. You know, at first it was the seven tricks that they play on you, and then it was the five rules to root them out. You can see, you can basically live a life of healthy boundaries and a life of joy and these kinds of things, and it will absolutely drive a narcissist crazy. But the thing that most people struggle with is what we're going to talk about today. And that is, okay,
getting rid of them.
Yeah, once I get there, you know, this person is definitely dug into my life. You know, I'm just as much to, you know, at fault for that. I have my own stuff that attracted them, and now they're here. And it's they grow like a petri dish full of, you know, small cells that all of a sudden become this large tree in your life, and you're going, how do I get that taken care of? How do I escort a narcissist to the door, keep my soul in a good place? How do I walk away healthy while there's this burning building of a person here? So that's what we tend to get to, is this one right here. And they go, okay, that's all great. Thank you for helping me root them out and notice what their tricks are. But now they're here.
And just to reiterate, we're talking about malignant narcissists, not people with some narcissistic characteristics, because that would be a lot of us, especially people that are successful, tend to have, you know, some narcissistic characteristics. So we want to be careful with that, too. We're talking about, you know, the definition of malignancy in terms of malignant narcissism. So
yeah,
just to add that in.
Yeah. I think what Beth's saying there is so key, because in our culture, we want to do a black and white thing, right? They are, they aren't. A lot easier to go that direction. We have a really hard time with nuanced conversation and nuanced thinking in our culture. So what Beth said is spot on. It's like, look, you know, we're talking about those who are malignant. These are cancerous people. They're out there, and you want to be really, really careful. And especially with what we're going to talk about right now, it's, you know, look, I need to escort them to the door, and it's not easy here. So we want to give you those kind of heads ups around it.
I want to talk about this a little bit. Okay. One of the things that, you know, we've been discussing here over the last few weeks is, you know, with narcissists, you know, we talked about all the characteristics. You can go back and listen to the replays if you want to hear them on your website here, Nicole. But we talked about the characteristics, what to look for, what do you do, and now we're to the point of escorting them to the door. One of the things that we have hit over and over again is with narcissists, this is about control and power. One of the things we haven't talked about yet until today that really hits me very hard personally, and I think, Nicole, you're going to resonate with this too, is that narcissists tend to pick really caring people, very loving and caring, strong people, not weaklings. They don't have any interest in a weakling, and I'm not labeling people, but they don't have an interest in people that aren't strong, because you don't make them look good if you're not strong. So they like strong people, strong yet caring, loving, compassionate, yet strong. So that fits a lot of healers that I know. That fits a lot of people, you know, in the healing arts. It fits a lot of compassionate people that are strong or business-oriented themselves, but they get hooked on people like this because malignant narcissists like strong people. They want you to make them look good. Well, if you're a weak person, you don't make them look good, so they're not even going to give you the time of day. So they like strong, successful people that are also compassionate and kind. And the kindness and compassion that you have, they know it's going to be hard for you to cut them out of your life. Because, hey, you're a very kind, compassionate, loving, healer type of person, right? So it's going to be hard for you to get rid of me. So that's just a really, I think, a key element that we haven't talked about until today that, I don't know, for myself made me kind of feel better about life.
Yeah, exactly. Because what we tend to do is beat ourselves up, right? It's like, wow. I mean, we had somebody write us emails, and they're like, why do I continually, you know, attract these malignant narcissists? And you could tell there's just a lot of beating up going on for themselves. That's not going to help anyone. It's not going to help you to think poorly of yourself. I like how Beth said that. You know, remind yourself, these folks don't come after people that are bozos. You know, they don't. They don't come after clowns. They don't come after people who, you know, don't have their act together. They come after people that actually are really, really strong folks who have really tender hearts, like super tender hearts. This is why spiritual communities are just a breeding ground for narcissists.
Gosh, that is so true.
Yeah, they are. Well, they are. It's like that. There's this one woman that called in, I think a couple weeks ago, Nicole, and she... where she was talking to Beth and I, and she was saying, talking about her boyfriend, and she was, you could tell, she was going, man, I have now spotted a narcissist, and I'm nearly engaged to this guy, right? It's like there we are, and she's like, what do I do? And Beth and I were walking it through, and we came down to, you have to be able to say goodbye. Like, this is not, you know, Beth is sweet about this, but, you know, she's like, look, this has probably got a 2% chance of making it, 98% chance of not, so here's what you need to do. And, man, that, it was so hard to talk to this woman because she was so caring. Like, you could tell. She was like, I love this guy. You know, like, I'm really tender toward him. And
well, caring people overlook flaws.
Yep.
And that's where, that's where you get hooked.
Yeah.
Because I know for Nicole, for me, for you too, Gil, and so it's not just about women versus men here. It's easy to, when you're a caring, loving, compassionate person, you overlook people's flaws for a long time. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's a tendency then for healers to get hooked.
Healers, those who are, you know, spiritual, will hold on for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, they at times will misinterpret, you know, God's voice for a bad piece of pizza, where they go, I think the Lord's telling me to, you know, God's telling me to stay in this, right? Because, you know, Beth and I are going, you need to start hearing God's voice say, run. That's God's voice. In this.
And then you know you got the right
voice. Run like the wind. Like the wind. This is so counter to my sweet, tender, awesome relationship with this God who loves everybody. And if God loves everybody, then I should love everybody. And we're going, you're mistaking love. for staying in there with someone who's going to be abusive to you forever, and that ain't love.
Well, I just got to tell a really quick personal story. And I've had a lot of relationships in my life.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about these.
You already know about them. I've had a lot of them. So, but I was in one in particular that was really difficult. And it was a narcissistic person at that time that was, I would put on the malignant spectrum. And I love people so much. And I've been a healer for so long. I was born loving people. And I overlook a lot of things in people because I just, you know, we all have issues, right? So we're going to give each other a break. But I had done so to the point where, I mean, it was literally killing me. I mean, my physical health was falling apart. And for anyone that knows me, I sometimes need a 2x4 over the head to wake up. I wasn't getting the small voice and the silent voice and signals. I needed a 2x4. So I was getting ready for the day one day, and I just heard a voice really loudly, "Get moving or die." Well, that was very loud and clear. So when you're saying go, it's like, whose voice are you listening to? Is it God or what is that voice? I mean, it was so clear to me. I mean, that was for me. That was God telling me, get moving or die, because that's the direction I was in. I was starting to get really bad health issues again, and it was scary. So I was so grateful for that voice and the direct command from on high, and that it really helped. And that's what we're talking about today, is how to get moving, how to say goodbye.
Yeah, you know, this nuanced thinking is not easy for us in our culture, right? It's black and white. So it's like, well, God loves me and God hates that narcissist, mm-hmm. so therefore this. He loves you both.
Mm-hmm.
And he's whispering or screaming to
in
you
my face.
He's saying, I love you and this other person enough to say it's over. It's over. So please make it sure that it's over. And that's why this is such a big thing here today, is saying here's how to move on, because you staying in there with that person is not helping them either. You're just further enabling them. And God needs to get their attention too. And as long as you're in their life and you guys are doing this sick dance, God can't find his way in. So he just continues to whisper, to say, you know, through the abuse and all that, it's over, move on. And I love you and I love this other person greatly. And the two of you together is not allowing that to tangibly take place. I can't show you how much I love you until you get out of that. Because you're leaning into that person for everything. And I need to be the one who's giving you that so you can live a healthy life. And then you can find someone you can love where, you know, God is number one and you're number two and they're number three. Because if you're no good for you, you're no good for anybody else. And if you're not deeply connected with God, then you're no good for yourself. So this is really important to understand in that God has both of you.
Mm-hmm,
and both
of
your best interests in mind.
That's
and
right.
And so, you know, in my family...
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
This isn't about making the other person bad, right? It's just about being realistic. Yeah.
Some of us sometimes, I think, need that. I remember a counselor told me once that when it comes to people that come to him that are getting divorced or want to get divorced, and he said it's really difficult when you have two really spiritual people because they both have these loving hearts, and so what you tend to have to do is somebody has to hate the other person in order to get this done. And I was like, well, I'm not sure you want to trash your own heart, as Nietzsche said, right? When you're dealing with monsters, be careful that you don't become a monster yourself. So you want to be careful with that, right? So you're walking this through, making sure that you're holding your heart really tenderly as well. Really tenderly as well. So just a heads up on that, I love what Beth was saying, you know, we're in this, you know, scenario here because spiritual communities are a breeding ground for narcissists.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, yeah. That's a true statement.
Well, I was thinking about this, too. I was like, you know, they do this for cars, right? I always think, man, I wish we were cars, because they have this company called Carfax, right? And so when you go and look at a car, you give them the number on that, you know, the VIN number and all that kind of thing, and it pops up with a Carfax of its entire history of that car. So you're making a really smart decision if you want to buy it or not. I mean, we actually have the technology to do this today. And I was thinking, I wish we had people facts I wish we had dating facts, right, where you could say, here's the person, you know, here's their social security number, and then it pops up and it tells you their entire history of relationships. So you can go, wow, do I want that and that? Look at all the dings on that one. And wow, over here, and Bali noticed that he's kind of burned every bridge ever, you know, in his life. Oh, I didn't know about this person, and on. It wouldn't be so good, wouldn't it, if we were able to do that? Because when we get, so we fall in love, right? It's like we're in an auto used car sales lot, especially if you're older. And man, you know, you're in there and you're getting sold on a lemon. I mean, really, right? But you're like, I love this car. Then you're driving it home, and all of a sudden, it's like, you know, the oil is coming out the back. You barely make it home, and it's like chug, 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 and behind you looks like a big black cloud of smoke. And you're saying to yourself, what did I do buying that? I wish in relationships we had, like, people facts. You know, yeah, talk about that.
Well, one of the things that I do with my clients that I will tell you has just been invaluable. I didn't used to do it with myself, but what I did with clients is the form of kinesiology that I use in my work at Healing Solutions is testing for truth, right? So truth testing, and you can test people's energy field. You can test people to see if they're a parasite. You can test people to see if they're a narcissist. You can test to see, you know, self-kinesiology. Test to see, you know, scale of 1 to 10. How good are they for you? How about them on their own, individually? How about you and them together? Emotionally, how do you test together? Scale of 1 to 10. Is that a negative? Well, that's not good. So you can really, I mean, if you have an objective tester, which I can be with other people, which I do all day, every day, it's really a good tool. It really helps.
So
the
people
more,
want to develop that. How do they do that? Because, I mean, it sounds,
yeah.
It sounds, I mean, so I'm married to a healer, right? And Beth, and I've seen her do these things, where she is able to test and she's able to help others develop ability when they come in contact with someone who they're being drawn to be able to test, is this good for me? Is it good for us? Is this going to be a good long, you know, what is this here? And I just
right.
think,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, how do they develop that? How does that happen?
Yeah. Well, if anyone is interested in learning how to do that, our website is Best Healing Solutions, like you are the best, besthealingsolutions.com. And actually, we have a class coming up this month. If you sign up for our e-list, we have a self-testing class coming up this month taught by Kalyani, which is bringing in the light of truth through self-muscle testing. It's inexpensive. She takes a lot of time with small classes and really gets people to learn this well. So that's one option. And then in the shopping cart, there's Truth Techniques, which is an old but good self-testing tutorial that's in a download form if people prefer to do that, you know, versus taking a class with others. So just kind of depending on people's personal preference. But, yeah, when you can learn how to do that, and then I always recommend people teach someone else to do it, too, because if you feel like it's hard to be objective on a specific subject, you can ask someone else to test it. And that's where, like, I come in for my clients because I'm totally objective. I don't care. In other words, I don't have a vested interest in what the answer is. If the person's a 2 of 10 for you, I'm going to tell you. If they're a 10 of 10, I'll tell you. I don't have a vested interest in the outcome of the testing. So, yeah, it's a great tool for relational issues and choosing correct people.
Yeah. Yep, there's your people facts right there. You know, it's a way to keep really connected to God and then be able to see things clearly and be able to test that way. So, you know, we talk about ancient truths for a modern world, and my background is seminary, so there's a couple passages in the scriptures you probably don't even know are in there when it comes to this. In Titus 3, 10 and 11, it says, when it comes to divisive people, you give them 2 warnings, and after that, get them out of your life. 2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if somebody is going to abuse you once and you bring it up, and then twice and you bring it up, on the third time, I don't know. If you're still sticking around, that's on you. And Beth and I have people very, very close to us that have been in really abusive relationships. You know, people that we know and love, and it breaks our heart even to this day to think back during those times where there was so much abuse going on, physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially, you name it, it was happening. And we look back at that and we're going, you know, it's okay after a couple of times to say, look, this isn't good for me. And so if you're, like right now, if you're involved in an abusive relationship and you are staying in there, it's probably because, you're going to hear us talk about this over time, but it's probably because you have what's called love addiction. And this is not talked about much. We talk about other kinds of addiction, you know, porn addictions, and we talk about alcohol and drug addictions and all these other kinds of addictions. Mm-hmm. But we don't talk about love addiction. It's actually becoming a really strong movement in our country right now in the USA. And so you can break this. You can break this pattern that you're in. You know, you can break it. It takes work. It takes work. You got to admit it to yourself that, wow, I'm not in a great spot, and I don't want to spend the rest of my life like this. But really, it comes to divisive people. You give them a couple warnings, and after that, get them out of your life. I think about how many times in my life, if I would have obeyed that, if I would have said, you know what, I'm going to take God at his word on that one, I would. I can tell you right now, I wouldn't have so many crazy, nutty, really horror stories in my life. Horror stories. You know, in Proverbs 4:14-15 says, be careful to shy away from cruel people. You know, they're out there, right? So it's okay to turn aside and run away from them. You know, I can't believe God says it, you know, because I thought it was just all light and love. You know, we're all going to sit around a campfire, hold hands, sing kumbaya, and it's all going to work out. And no, it's personal responsibility in relationships that says, I'm going to be really good to myself. I'm going to be really good to myself. I wish someone would have sat me down a long time ago and said, hey, here's your deal for life. Be good to you. Be good to you because you're the only one of you got. And God says that to you. Be really good to you. Be really good to you. Okay? So with that in mind, we just want to talk about four ways how to be able to escort a narcissist to the door. Four ways to do this to where you can break free. And again, once you do break free, and this is a big deal for Beth and I because we see people do this all the time, whether it's cancer or whatever it is, that when they finally break free of the dis-ease, when they finally break free, they go right back to it.
Yeah.
So we see this all the time, right? Someone goes in for cancer treatment. They end up being healed via the doctors and God and all these things, and they come right back out of that, and they go right back into the habits that got them in the hospital in the first place. Mm-hmm. They get right back to drinking. They get right back to being in really, really poor relationships. They're not taking care of themselves very well. In our culture, we view it this way. I'm going to go not get healed. I'm going to go get fixed so I can come back and keep doing the same things I was doing. This happens with relationships. I'm going to leave this abusive person, and all of a sudden, a month later, I'm back in with another abusive person, just a different name.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't...
Or the same name.
Yeah, you keep going back. Because you're not taking care of something that's in you that needs to be healed. Mm-hmm. It needs to be healed. And that comes with time. And so we, you know, when I grew up, I'm so old, but we had this video game named Frogger, you know, and it just kept hopping lily pad to lily pad. It was a really fun game. All that to say is I feel like that's what we do in relationships. We just hop from one lily pad to another with nothing in between that says I need to stay right here long enough to take care of myself, to heal up enough to where I am now able to spot what health looks like in a relationship. And that takes work. That takes work. So, number one on this, how to escort a narcissist to the door.
Okay, the first one is what we've been talking about. You got to say goodbye. So, the shock block goodbye. I don't know if you've all seen the Heisman Trophy and how that looks. You know, the guy's got his hand pushing backwards, sticking his hand in your face. That's it. Okay, so, yeah, it's do the shock block goodbye. In other words, it's not just goodbye, I'm leaving. It's you have no way to contact me anymore, I take away all ability for you to get into any crack in the door of my life. I have a client who I've worked with, a young woman, and she has a malignant narcissist for an ex-boyfriend, and they still have some of the same friends. Well, he moved out of town, but when he comes to town, he gets his Bear Mutual friends to try to contact her and get her over to a party or get her over to an event or, you know, give her a message for him. That's been really difficult for her because they have some of the same friends. And I had told her, you know, in one of our sessions, I was talking to her about, you know, talk to your friends directly that you are, you know, they are not to give out your new email, your new phone number, your new, you know, Facebook login, what that you're not, they're not to do that anymore, and set it really firm. And she's like, well, I don't think he's trying to get back with me. And it's like, no, it's got to be ironclad boundaries. There is no way for you to get back into my life. So, no, that's going really well for her, by the way. She, you know, followed through with what we talked about. It happened a couple of times with friends, and it was just, it just took her back to all the trauma they had gone through before, and she was starting to have anxiety again. So she really did need to set that, you know, shock block goodbye, talk to her friends, and get them involved in this. You know, I don't care if the narcissist has some of your stuff or has your favorite blanket at his house or whatever. Doesn't matter. Just let it go. You want to shut all of those open doors and not let them back, because if there is a crack, I mean a pinhole, they'll find it.
Yeah.
Get back into your life.
Yes. So, Nicole, just real quick, if there's anyone that's calling in, just let us know. I know that calling number.
We talk too much. Let us know.
Yeah.
We do have a
caller.
You
know, 646-795-4274. I mean, if you have anyone you want us to touch base with, just let us know as we go, okay?
We do have a caller on, just whenever you want to work it in.
All right, let me take 1 second here, and then we're open
okay.
to that.
Okay.
Well, actually, they just dropped, so carry on.
Okay.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
That's right. I love what Beth just said there, because it's like when you tell a narcissist goodbye, it's like you're cutting off their oxygen. They're so rare to them, they don't see themselves
so
as this kind of person.
Right, yeah.
So that's why Beth says they'll find a pinhole in your plan, because they're looking to breathe. They need that oxygen. And so we'll say change your passwords,
mm-hmm.
change your keys to your place. We talk to people that are saying goodbye to narcissists. They'll say, yeah, but I think I left my favorite purse over there. Yeah, or my blank, whatever it is. And we're like, let it go. If you had $10,000 that you left at this person's apartment, just give it to them. Get out. You know, it's worth it in the end. You know, you just be really, really careful to be ironclad in this, because it also says something to you. It says, look, I care about myself enough to wrap this up, to button it up, to make sure that I'm taking care of me. And these narcissists, you've got a shock block sometimes, and that's okay. I know this goes again. You're such a tender soul,
empathic.
And so this is like, yeah, you're so empathic. You,
mm-hmm. It's hard.
Yeah, you've been such a life giver to this person, right? And they've told you that. Narcissists have told you that you're everything to them, and all of a sudden now you're cutting off their narcissism oxygen supply, and it doesn't feel good, but it's the right thing to do. So just leave no way on that to let this person get in contact with you. Okay? If you show a crack, they will pounce. If you show a crack, you know, they will pounce. So that's the first kind of way, is this shock block goodbye. Think about this. Think about all your passwords. Think about every way that they have to get a hold of you. Change your phone number. Change your email or block them on your email, block them on your whatever it is, but you need to be able to say goodbye, because they're going to wait around long enough to wonder if you'll come back to them. They'll wait.
Yep, or reach out to you and try to ask you an unrelated question about, not about your relationship, just something unrelated. Hey, what was so-and-so's mom's name again? No response.
Yeah. No response. Mm-hmm. Shock block does not mean, but they just needed a little information that only I had. Yeah, no.
Thank you.
No response.
Yeah, the second one. This is really good. I love this. And some of you may know, my training back in the day was as a psychologist. And then I became a healer after my own chronic illness. And this one just really resonates. The second thing to do to get a narcissist out of your life and escort them to the door for your own good and future moving forward is communicate to yourself in detail why you left that relationship. And what I mean is don't just talk to yourself about it in the moment. Record it. Record it on your iPhone, a video. Write yourself a letter and email it to yourself and someone else you trust to hold it for you when you decide you're going to delete it. Communicate with yourself exactly why you wanted out and needed to be out of this relationship. You've got it written down. You've got it in video form so you can go back to it. Why is that important? Because all of us, especially empathic, intuitive, healer type people, people with chronic illness who tend to be really sensitive, people with health issues, people struggling with depression, all of those things, all people in those categories tend to want to make everything feel and look okay. So then we don't remember the bad times. We remember the good times, and then over time we'll say, oh, but you know what? They weren't so bad. He or she wasn't so bad. That boss of mine in Los Angeles, oh, she wasn't so bad. You want to bet? Okay. So we do that. We want to smooth it over because it feels more comfortable. Our minds want to go to that place and remember those good times, and it wasn't so bad, and romanticize the story. When you communicate with yourself in written or video form, then this belief of, oh, it was so great, goes out the window real quick when you look at that and remind yourself and share it with somebody else that you trust. I love that as a strategy. It works really well.
Yeah, you almost need to, you know, like, I don't know how technologically adept you are, but
I'm not at all, but I can write myself a letter.
Yeah, the best time, and I mean it's the best time to sit down and video yourself talking about this relationship is right after you've been fully abused, and I mean that. You need to sit down. I don't know if you did this, but I used to do this because I knew that I was I struggled in relationships mightily, and the reason was because I had a lot to overcome, and so I filled pages and pages of journals of abusive scenarios and areas where I was, areas where I was triggered and what happened to me and with me and how I then, you know, dealt with that, which was many times just as much or more dysfunctional than was happening back. So it's writing then all those things. You know, we giggle about this, but it's like do a TikTok, which is really a, you know, right? Do a rap, do a TikTok rap. I mean, do something that for you that you're like, this is something that is so important. And remember, we romanticize the good times and forget.
And we block out the bad.
We just block it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Beth and I deal with folks that are in relationships and they have a breakup and then inevitably, right, especially with something like this, they get back together. They want to get back together within a month or a week or whatever it will be. And Beth and I will go, well, which one of you all went to therapy? Which one of you went and got healed? Did you both? Because we have this deal, right, that we think that if we just, it was so good, we just forgot how good it was. So we got to get back together and get back together. And within, I call it the 72-hour rule. Within 72 hours, you will have another big-time breakdown, and you'll go, oh, man, that's why I left right there. That's why I did it. And now you undo it all again. right? So it's always for us, it's which one of you when God healed. So the Simone Biles thing that's just that's happened here recently where she dipped out of the USA Olympics gymnastics piece here just this week made me think of this. And I'm not here to pick a side and all that kind of stuff. That's not what I want to do. What I do want to do is say, is it interesting that when we have fractures on the outside, like someone breaks an arm or somebody breaks a leg or somebody, whatever it would be, we see the physical breakdowns, right? We see the cast. We see all the physical therapy. We notice all those things. I just had back surgery, and you would know it if you saw me. People right away are like, oh, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Like, especially right after back surgery for me, I just felt like, and maybe I'll keep doing this, but the funkier I walked, the more people came up, are you okay, sir? And I found myself liking that. So maybe I'm just going to keep doing that. Oh, sir, I got a lot of attention with my, you know, with my back having surgery. And so we're so great, right, in our culture, going, hey, how are you doing with that and that and that? But when it comes to the internal fractures that we have,
We just don't see those,
and we don't even talk about them. It's almost like, you know, I saw someone say to me the other day, if we only saw ourselves on the inside like we do on the outside, we'd have a lot more compassion for each other.
And ourselves.
Yes, right. And so, like, Simone Biles, right, she checks out of the Olympics. I guarantee you, and she has more internal fractures over the years than when she was sexually abused by Larry Nassar of Michigan State. She's the only one who's put a name to that. She has, if you go back, she a few years ago had a meltdown. And you know what we say to people that have these internal body casts, right? We just go, get right back up and go. Get right back up and go. Can you imagine? If we would have been tender towards Simone, we would have never allowed her to be in those Olympics. We would have been able to say, you're going to have a breakdown again, and we're afraid you're going to do it right in the middle of the Olympics. We would have said that had we just been more adept at stopping and honoring people's internal fractures. That girl is 24. That's it. And if you read her you know, personal history sheet, it is no surprise that she melted down. No surprise. Matter of fact, there was enough people in her life to be able to say, we're not letting you go to Tokyo. Because I'll tell you what, you show up in a sling and your foot's in a boot and you've got that neck brace since you broke your neck. You walk into a room like that, what would we say? Get on that plane and go to Tokyo. No, we'd say, you're going to stay home and watch that on a big screen TV. But when somebody has these internal fractures and we just absolutely gloss them over, say, get right back up there and go. Look, I think there's a lot of us out there right now walking along with massive fractures in our lives, taking on new jobs, taking on relationships, taking on all these big things in our lives, and we're walking in as wounded people.
Well, we keep going. In our culture, we keep going until we drop.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate. I remember Wayne Dyer talking about that several years back of, you know, isn't it unfortunate that people don't do their inner work just as a regular course of life, you know, that they do it when they've crashed and burned. That's when they call for help. And isn't that too bad, you know? It's true, and I guess that's human nature that we don't ask for help until things are so bad that our life just blew up.
Now, I think a great prayer, if you want to ever pray it, is, God, help me see people the way you do. Because, you know, God talks a lot about how we look at the appearance, we look at the outside, but we don't look in at the heart, but he does. And I think that's important to pray that prayer. You know, hey, I want to see people the way you do. I just do. I want to see that.
Well, you know, the people that I work with overall have the opposite issue. They have compassion for everyone else except themselves. So they, you know, have love for other people, and they'll say, oh, that person went through such a hard time, you know, and they have so much compassion for them. But if they went through a hard time, they don't have compassion for themselves.
Correct.
And I've had so many clients over the years say, you know, they're like, well, I'm a perfectionist. I hold myself to a higher standard. Yes, of course I'd have compassion if one of my friends was going through this, but because it's me, I should have known better. That shouldn't have happened to me. I'm a perfectionist. I have higher standards in this. So a lot of the people I work with chronic conditions and chronic relational issues too, depression and physical problems, everything under the sun, they're really nice towards everybody else. They're just very harsh with themselves.
Yeah. Yep.
And if they saw themselves as they see other people, they'd be much kinder to themselves. So, you know, that's a real significant component.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yep. Yep, it's both ways. It's both ways. Absolutely. And, you know, narcissists, remember this, they have charisma, they're fun, that's why the pullback to them will be strong. So your reasoning for leaving needs to be stronger than the initial pull. Your reasoning for leaving needs to be stronger than that initial pull toward them, and that's strong. And so colorfully communicate to yourself why you left. Number three in this whole thing is, narcissists are like a drug, so and he says, so find like a love addiction gathering in town. Do whatever you can do, you know, to be able to say, call for help. I mean, that's why Beth and I are here. So, you know, if you get on besthealingsolutions.com, you can initiate that process. And again, Beth and I do this with a lot of folks. And so, yeah, if you want to deal with this piece of you, again, you can't change them. That's on them.
Right. No need to try.
Yeah, so, you know, I would say stop getting the meetings together with all your friends and bashing that person. You know, all that stuff is just really poor energy. What you want to do is raise your energy toward yourself. I love what Beth just said. I mean, it's true, right? It's like, take care of you, you know. Begin to pray, hey, I want to see myself the way, God, you see me. I want to be able to be loving toward that guy. I was telling Beth, I saw somebody sent me a picture the other day from my family where I was like 3 years old and I was outside my grandma's house with my brother Eric, and he's 1 year older than me. And I mean, I forgot this picture existed. And we're standing out there, and I have these big buck teeth because I suck my thumb, you know, for so long. I finally got over that last week. But it was like I was looking at that kid, and, you know, and knowing what I know now, was just really able to hold that kid well, you know, to be able to see that kid through different eyes back then, and to be able to see him and be compassionate toward him. You know, it was really a gift God gave me to get that picture sent. So I could just look at that boy, you know, and begin to see him the way God sees him. And then say, God, help my heart really get in line with that. And the more I give myself that kind of compassion, then the less addictive other people are to me who I want to care for me in ways, right? So I begin to say, okay, those addictions that I have, that love addiction, that peace that I keep. By the way, if you want to look up symptoms of love addiction, they're all there. We can even put them on our website. It's a long list, but boy, when I look at that list, I go, wow, I've been there. And it's because I wasn't holding that kid like he needed to be held. And so so all that to say is that, you know, Beth and I are here for you in that, full on. And to just be able to say, yeah, you know, I want to take that step to break this because I have a life in front of me that is worth more than what I'm giving it. You know, I love Beth's deal when God said to her,
get moving or die.
I mean, that's where a lot of us are, right? I mean, if you're listening to this and that's not where you are, this is probably not your show, right? I mean, for Beth and I, we've both been to the precipice, to the cliff's edge on this, and come back. But it can happen for all of us if we want it to, you know? So for me, it was be able to say, I'm powerless when it comes to this person in my life, and my life's become unmanageable when I'm with them, and so God, please help me. And, you know, and then God begins to show the people in your life, right? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. You know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So, you know, Beth and I, this is one place that we get to hold you and we get to help you walk this through and really be able to break free and spend the rest of your life in a brand new, awesome place.
And all addiction, whether it's love addiction or, you know, addiction to substances, addiction to a person, you know, all of it boils down to, as most things do, old childhood trauma, you know, and old childhood wounding and unhealed wounds. And those things can be healed, so that you can recreate yourself in life and recreate yourself in relationships. So, you know, for me, that's, and there may be some curved lines along the way, but that's a pretty direct correlation between point A and point B when you do your inner work on what, you know, what led you to that addiction and where does that come from for you in your life. You can heal it and be free.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds simple. It takes a lot of work, but it still can be, you know, a simple process. I mean, that's what's required to move through it. You know, and addiction typically, and across the board, and we can talk about addiction on other shows, but coming up here, but addiction really is about how to soothe anxiety. You know, all addicts have anxiety, and the addiction is just what, the addiction of choice to cover it up.
Right.
So we'll talk about that more, but that's, you know, that's some of what we'd look at with someone that's, you know, struggling with addiction, even addiction in a relationship, because they're getting needs met in that relationship that are helping them with their panic and anxiety. So even though they know it's not a great relationship and this person is not a good person for them, letting them go feels more anxiety-provoking than staying in at times. So, you know, that's where the work comes in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's this joke, it goes like this, a love addict and a narcissist walk into a bar, and her grenade was formed. So, seriously, I mean, yeah, you know, it's, yep, we do this thing. So, number four, again, number three,
mm-hmm.
get help. You can do that. That's, man. Number four, this is how to make sure that you're escorting a narcissist to the door. I think,
yeah.
well,
yeah.
is give yourself grace in this, and then give yourself time, right, to grieve. You know, it's learning how to grieve is really important. And so there's a lot of books out there around how to grieve well, because we don't really know how to do that very well, I think. And that's one thing that Beth and I deal with people. A lot of the reasons that they're clinging to these codependent relationships
mm-hmm.
and with narcissists is because they haven't really healed enough in their past from losses that they've incurred. That's like, you know, when my mom passed away of lung cancer, I was 37 years old, and no one said to me, because she was like, oh, my best friend. And, you know, Beth and I talked. Beth actually saw my mom when she met me. It was really cool. She's always like, your mom introduced me to you. Yeah, tap me on the shoulder, which I have no doubt. My mom was a huge fan of mine even when no one else was, and I was a little quite reckless as a kid and struggled a lot. And my mom was just so, man, she saw something in me, right? And so when she died of lung cancer at 37, when I was 37, as my best friend, you know, I hadn't grieved that until about 3 years ago. And so, you know, this is something that I think that no one pulled me aside during that time, right, and said, hey, give yourself grace here. Give yourself time to grieve, right, in a really safe community. You know, find some people that you can grieve with. I'll never forget my brother just breaking down crying the night my mom passed away, and the coroner came. We're such a small town. The coroner was 80 years old, and he needed me to help get my mom in the body bag and zip it up. And, you know, my brother was came in a little late on a flight, and so but one thing I love what my brother did is that he called a couple friends of his, and they met him over at our house, and he just wept for a couple hours, and these guys just stayed right there with him. And I remember watching that and just going, man, I've always been like the strong guy, right, that has taken everything on by myself. And of course, all of that came back to roost in my life later. It did. You know, the grenade was being formed in me at that point. And so, so please, on your end, if you're saying goodbye to someone like this that you've really loved, but you know it's over, you know, get moving or die, please give yourself a lot of grace in this. Give yourself a lot of time. Give yourself time to grieve in community with your best friends. Please tell some people. And stay busy serving. Just make sure that you're in some sort of out there mode. Most people with talk to Beth and I, they have hold up. They isolate, and they say, I'm going to just kind of roll into the fetal here for a while. And maybe that's okay for a little bit, but long term, you know, Gandhi said this. He said the best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in service to others. That's actually a really healthy thing to do when you're ready for it, is to get back out there and find yourself in a place of making sure you're taking care of you, and then making sure you're kind of out there in community taking care of others and that you're in that kind of flow of life. Don't take yourself out of the flow of life, at least not very long. That's trouble. And please don't get right back up on Tinder or Match or, you know, eHarmony or whatever else is out there that you find yourself running and clinging toward to be able to salve this pain in your life, you know. So watch for those things. But those are the four ways of being able to be set free there. A biggie on this one is do it in community. And, again, I keep coming back to, you know, Beth and I are definitely here for you if you need any help in these matters, and we would love to help you do that. So anything as we wrap this up?
You know, I'm just sitting here listening to you. I love listening to you, but I'm also thinking about, you know, just what I've gone through in my own life, you know, with relationships, and how that last thing that you just said is really important. Especially for people, like I know a lot of our listeners, you know, that are healers and therapists and empaths and helpers and are intuitive, it is really important to get back out there and keep helping people when you've gone through something like this. I know for myself that was like, you know, that a salve that just really helped me. You know, it's like get out there and help others again. And that makes all the difference in the world. You know, it's life-giving, right? So I really like that one as a wrap-up. I think that's great. So just to reiterate those four really quickly about, you know, escorting a narcissist to the door. The number one is the shock, block, goodbye. No contact, no pinholes in, no cracks in. Number two, communicate with yourself specifically why you left, whether that's in a letter form, a video that you keep. Share it with somebody that you trust so you don't have a tendency to romanticize the relationship once it's over and allow something to crop up like that again or even going back to that same person. The third one is really about, you know, narcissists are like a drug and it can be like a love addiction. So that's something that, you know, no shame in getting help for that. When you get help for that, then you know, then you're not destined to repeat it again. Gil and I work with people with addiction all the time and with struggling through relationships, so we're happy to help as well on that one. And then, the last one is really give yourself time to grieve and space and give yourself a sanctuary, a safe place to be. Give yourself grace and love. Connect with people. Don't spend all your time alone after you've gone through a relationship like this. And then, like I was just sharing there personally, you know, really getting out there and helping people again. And that just helps heal everything, you know, that connection. So, that was really, really good. That was really fun. So thanks for having us on again, Nicole.
Yeah, thanks, Nicole.
Awesome series. Of course, the line started to work now, but we're at the top of the hour. So final thoughts and anything you want to share as we wrap?
No, we look forward to being back in 2 weeks, and we'll let you know what's going on. If there's, you know, some follow-up questions on, you know, this narcissism component, we're happy to talk about those, or we can, you know, start off on another subject as well, but we'll be in contact. But we're here for your listeners, and I think they have our, you know, contact information if anyone wants to reach out as well.
Beautiful. All right, we'll talk to you in two. Enjoy the summer until then. Looking forward to next
Nicole.
Time. All right, take care
Nicole. Thank you.
Beth and Gil are all linked up at newsforthesoul.com. We're back with more right after this.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.